All rights reserved, Steve Coleman and the Origami VanCast. Hello world, this is the Origami VanCast. I am your host, Steve Coleman, joining you from beautiful Lake Havasu City in Arizona. It is a sunny day here in February, and definitely enjoying being in this warm part of the country, while the rest of the country is in the cold. It wouldn't have been so long ago I would have been in New Hampshire for the winter, and I'm happy that that's not the case this year, but just for the winter. I do enjoy New Hampshire. So I came down to Ehrenberg, Arizona earlier, a couple weeks back, to meet a friend of mine, Jamie Dimon. His YouTube channel is Enigmatic Nomadics, and coming up on there sometime soon will be my a tour of my rig, and I hope you'll check it out. We are also camped with another YouTuber and his dog. Mac and Bravo are a traveling duo. They change vehicles. I believe they started out on a motorcycle, then a semi. Now they're in a truck. And yeah, hanging out with them. Enjoyed having a few meals with them. So Bravo is a Queensland Australian shepherd. He's like some kind of part dingo. And he can jump as high as my shoulders, which I would say, you know, is about 5 feet. And he's pretty acrobatic dog, and he is very intuitive and very very good in many situations. But he's a herding dog, so he has some interesting behaviors, and he's pretty hyper. Anyway, he's a cool dog, and you should check him out, Mac and Bravo, over on YouTube. Also, while I'm plugging other people's work, I'd like for you to please consider checking out Mary Biles' podcast, Cannabis Voices. If you have any interest in learning more about cannabis and the endocannabinoid system, and really almost any question you could have about cannabis. There's something like 30 shows now, and I highly recommend you check it out. So the show is about to take a turn into a different format where it's not so much just me standing and talking into the microphone and telling you a story that is very difficult for me to then produce because you know, the stories are hard to tell over and over again and listen to the 100-plus times I probably do to make these shows. I know it doesn't sound like it, but they are a lot of work. So the new show format, I guess I'll go ahead and tell you about it now. It's going to be three segments, you know, just simple as can be. There'll be one on chronic pain, one on fascia, and one on cannabis. You know, that'll be the focus, and there'll probably be some overlap, and we'll see, you know, how much intelligible information I can bring you on these various subjects without guests, but I'm going to, you know, it's now time to get guests in these areas. So that's what I'm going to work on. But before we switch to the new format, there's still a little bit more of the Steve Coleman Show to go. You guys ready? I mean, if you followed me this far, first of all, again, thank you. So, okay, the story today is about my leg. Part of my job, I had to fly back and forth from Boston to L.A. on a regular basis. And what I would do when I would get out to L.A., especially because I was going out in the winter and when it was, you know, it was cold in Boston, and you come back and your car would be in the long-term parking covered in snow, you know, and you're there dressed for California, and now you got to locate a shovel and remove your vehicle from the airport. It's not so nice, but going out there is great. So I was going out to to the greater LA area. I would get a hotel about a mile or so, a little bit more from where I was staying. I wouldn't get a car, I would just take Uber, and but most of the time, if I had the time, I would just walk. You know, nobody walks in that part of the world, but definitely in the winter, you know, and you're coming from Boston, it's so much nicer. It was just great to be outside and walk. But back in those days, I was still a little bit limpy, even after, you know, what, 19 years or 18 years of, since the accident. I mean, my leg's in good shape. I could, like, jog, but I definitely wouldn't be running for any extended period, right? I mean, I'll put a picture on Instagram or something, maybe, of what my leg looks like, but where the bones came out and everything, I mean, the tissue was all adhered. When I would go to California, you know, there's the matter of getting my medication over, and because not everything worked, and you know, really, whenever the medicines would backslide or where I would miss them in this time period, it was really painful. Sometimes I refer to it as recrystallizing, and sometimes I talk about having to tear it again, but it's somewhere in between there. Yeah, so if I wouldn't get, you know, I have to take the Neprenol just right, and I then have to smoke CBG containing marijuana, you know, in a certain amount of time period too. So I had, you know, but obviously you can't travel with that. So, you know, I tried some pills, and those worked, you know, the first few times that I went out there. I would take them, and yeah, I mean, I have all these problems with edibles, and I wasn't well controlled, but I was far enough down, you know, I wasn't like in the extreme pain anymore. So even if it was out of control for like a week or whatever, I could, you know, it would take a couple weeks to recover, but I could get by with, you know, like some THC CBD pills, mostly daytime stuff. In January of 2019, actually December 2018, we had stayed briefly at my brother's house, and I had started using a little tiny amount of cannabis in the morning beforehand because I didn't have to work. You know, it was a Christmas holiday. So I was kind of testing to see, you know, will this help me, you know, with the tissue breaking up and anything. I kind of like to move a little faster. And so it did work while I was on vacation, and I started, and I sort of felt out a dose, you know, that I felt I could work on and everything. It was about 35 milligrams in the morning. And I started getting to where, you know, I would get up at 4 or 5 in the morning and take it. And then by the time that, you know, I was driving to work, I was pretty okay. I started going into work a little bit later then. One of the last times I went out there, instead of taking pills, I bought a little cartridge of vape. So these are little pre-filled cartridges that you can get from the dispensary in New Hampshire. But whenever I got out to California, now granted you could buy it there, but I need specific things. I don't know where to buy it. I don't have a car. I could get all those things. I could have gotten a car. I could have, you know, use the California dispensaries, but everything, you know, once you have something that works, it's very scary to go spend $50 or $100 or more on a gamble. So I avoided that. I like this story, so I want to tell it right. So I'm coming out, you know, I've been successful with what I'm doing, and I'm feeling good about myself, you know, in pretty much all respects. Everything's going well with me with the medication. I've got it figured out, you know, or at least I'm starting to figure it out, and I'm getting more and more confident. And certainly, you know, I have been on a trend in the opposite direction for, you know, the last, you know, over a year now, you know, 15 months or whatever. So I land out in SoCal, you know, in a cold New England winter that I left. I land out there, you know, a few days before my birthday. I'm just going out for this short stint that I told you about earlier. I step out of the plane. This is actually, I flew into Long Beach Airport because there was a direct flight. And Long Beach Airport doesn't have jetways. You just get off on the steps out of the plane. And as even though this is a rainy year in Southern California, and it kind of sucked that way, but it was still SoCal, you know. Which is a place that is just near and dear to my heart for a bunch of reasons. I just love it. And I step off the plane into that air and just instantly first step out of the door. Not even down the thing yet. I start having a flashback to riding the motorcycle out in Southern California, you know, just that couple weeks before my wreck. When I had driven out there with a bike in the back of my truck and arrived in Orange County and inhaled that, you know, just that particular kind of springtime air of that area. Gave me some flashbacks, and I didn't really understand why, but it wasn't, I think it was in the Uber ride to my hotel that I realized that, hey man, you know, my wreck was during this time period, 18 years before. And it I had been in California just immediately before that. So they're kind of linked together. And this is so weird, you know, 18 years later. The whole trip was a little bit spooky because it just had that feel, you know. It was almost like that same time. And I had not expected this. So when I got out there and I got back from doing what I was doing, it was a quick out and back trip on that one, I think. And so I think I was on the phone pacing around, and I had been, you know, hitting this cartridge. I wasn't going to smuggle it back a second time, so I was hitting it more than usual. I was like, all right, well, this is a good time to run an experiment. I need to dispose of this cartridge. Whatever I don't use tonight's going to wind up in the trash anyway, so, you know, why not use it as much as I can? And as I did, you know, and this sort of coincides, if you go back and look through my notes on something I'm going to say later about the dabs, but by using more and more, suddenly my leg, with all of the adhesions from where, you know, the tissue is healed around the bones, and that leg was in two pieces. You know, the leg began to, as I was hitting this cartridge very frequently, and I got a high dose, I don't know if you just heard my leg crack right there, but it began to pop and crack every time I would put any weight on it or stretch it or anything, up to three times a second. And not just from places that you would say are joints, but from, you know, all over the area where, we call it the divot in my family, but it's where the flesh is missing from my leg, and the, what's left over scar tissue just adhered to the bone. So in that general vicinity where the bones were broken, there was a lot of adhesion. And that night in that hotel room, it started to break up, and my leg started moving more and more and became much more flexible. My ankle did. And that process, you know, kind of went on for like several months. I ended up going to Burlington, Vermont, where I had a lot of trouble. Actually, you know, marijuana has been legal there for a long time, but there's no legal way to buy it. And I didn't really check that information out. I just got off the plane from California and got in the car and drove up to Vermont with kind of not the right strains on me, assuming that I could buy some when I got there. And that was a major mistake. But I did get by, and had a weekend there. Finished up, ended up eventually, after another couple months, going up to Alaska and trying a few different strains there. And I would say, you know, the trip to Alaska was kind of a turning point. For the first time, it wasn't the best of trips due to, you know, personal issues, but what I learned in it is that I could control my pain with cannabis and continue on this path that I had discovered. Now, you know, like a year and a half in, this would have been, so this would have been July, early July of 2019. Yeah, and so, I mean, I guess, you know, there were a couple trips to dispensaries there and getting strains and you know, figuring out, you know, from their test results versus, you know, all the other places I'd been. I hadn't yet been to everywhere I've been, so that, you know, I mean, I hadn't been anywhere yet, come to think of it. So, but by that trip to Alaska, you know, the people in dispensaries were pretty cool. Whenever I asked to look at the test results and everything, they more than welcomed me to please come in and please spend as much time as I wanted to looking at their test results. And they would actually keep out paying customers. They told me so that I could do so. And I really appreciated that. I didn't get that treatment anywhere else but Fairbanks, Alaska, in all of my travels. Most places are not super excited whenever you ask to see the test results. So when I came back from Alaska, you know, my personal life was suffering this whole time. And I had made a decision back in, at the end of February that, you know, it was the end, of my marriage. And, so I had to figure out, you know, how I was going to put all the pieces back together and, continue on with my healing. And really, you know, I kind of made the decisions like, okay, well, if I have to destroy my life with marriage or with a divorce, then I might as well make the best of it. I might as well take this big perturbation and, you know, go ahead and do everything that I want to do, you know, live in a renewable way, move into a sustainable career that, you know, doesn't destroy my body. You know, really take time. What I realized back in February was that it was going to take, you know, probably about a year and a half of continuous stretching for me to, on the medication, on the CBG and fentanyl, or, oh my God, I can't believe I said that, on the CBG and cannabis. You know, when I came back from Alaska, it wasn't too long until I quit my job. It was just another couple weeks. Once I, you know, decided that, you know, I had figured out, I built some confidence that I could, you know, find medicine elsewhere, I decided it was time. And so quit the job and started preparing the house for sale. And in that time period, I also, so the only pharmaceutical that I was still on in that time period was gabapentin, but I had been taking 2,400 milligrams a day, which is a stratospheric dose of that stuff. And it really, what I didn't know at the time, was that it limited the amount of marijuana that I could tolerate. It just made it so intoxicating that I couldn't use too much more than probably about 100 milligrams in a dose. you know, which is a pretty big bong hit, but most joints are something like 700 milligrams. Sometimes small ones are 500, but and sometimes big ones are 1,000 milligrams or a gram. But just for reference, you know, so like a 100-milligram dose of flower is what I was taking back then, but that was while I was on gabapentin. When I got off of gabapentin just a few days after, I started noticing that, boy, this really isn't hitting me very hard. And at that same time, I had gone back through my notes, and I looked through, you know, at that time, like 2.5 years of notes, and I see that, you know, really all the major breakthroughs that I remember, all the big things that happened, you know, every time something major tore, it was always around a dab or a heavy dose, but it was pretty much always around a dab, you know, which wasn't common for me. So I started thinking, well, hey, now that I can tolerate more, I ought to just see what the maximum is. We've been, you know, we've had too much or, you know, been too high and everything, so we can tolerate it a few times. We, you know, talking about myself. So yeah, I'm off the gabapentin, and I just started realizing that I could use about 3 times as much more and still tolerate it. And that the more that I use, the better it got. Now, this was, you know, marijuana that's probably, you know, 2 to 5% CBG. And we're talking about, you know, taking maybe a 300-milligram dose. So that's maybe like 15 milligrams of CBG then that's being burned up in that little fire and then being filtered through the water, etc. So, but what I found, so I could take that much, I could tolerate that much more weed, you know, I mean, as far as the effect, but man, just consuming in an entire joint or half a joint, like in 3 puffs, you know, 300 milligrams in 3 puffs. But I was still using flower whenever I started van life and came out in an empty van to build it here in southern Arizona in the fall of 2019. I had purchased an electric nail in my travels in Iowa, and I just only had like 2 doses of concentrate to use it on it. And even though I passed through Oklahoma at that time period, I didn't use any of their dispensaries. I didn't want to go through the trouble at that time, so I headed on out to Arizona and pretty much bought my weed off the recreational market, concentrates and flower, primarily in California, but some in Nevada. So van life kind of saved, did a lot of things for me. One, it gave me a vehicle to move all of my ex-wife's belongings from New Hampshire down to Oklahoma, where she lives now. And so that was helpful. And then when I came out, you know, it's obviously a place for me to live and record this show. I wanted to, you know, with the amount of change, I know it's crazy or it sounds, you know, it's certainly, maybe it's becoming a little more common. It is becoming more common these days to live in a vehicle, but I know to a lot of people it seems pretty far out there. But it checked a lot of boxes for me, which included allowing me to travel and explore what was happening with this marijuana using more than just the one dispensary that I'm allowed to go to in New Hampshire and their seven products that they sell. Now there, I can get more by driving to Maine, and then I think there are some other things that you could do to try some different dispensaries and, you know, the other two dispensaries in New Hampshire if you really, really wanted to. But really, all that just seems like an impediment to me, and I don't think it's reasonable to ask sick people to have to go around and, you know, you already have to figure out your own freaking medicine, so how about they make it easy for you to access the different variations of it? But no, that's not the way it works right now. So I did get into the van, and by coming out to California and Nevada, you know, I was able to really, you know, try a lot of different strains. And I unexpectedly had to come back to Oklahoma for personal reasons. And that allowed me some time to take a break there. It allowed me some time to, rebuild some parts of the van, on my buddy, Casey and Alicia's farm. You know, I got to, weather out the early days of, COVID, in a very rural setting where, you know, had a lot of, farm. I grew up on a small farm myself, so you end up with these little piles of stuff everywhere, you know, that you would, and yeah, luckily, you know, there are a few sticks of lumber kicking around and a few pieces of metal of things that could turn into van parts and add a sink. I really didn't have to put too much more money into it to get it the way it was. And the whole thinking whenever I left and decided to move into a van, I was like, okay, this is going to save some money. It's going to allow the transportation of the things. But it's also going to allow me to have a vehicle to take to places in this country that I know for a fact are beautiful. At least, you know, I knew that if I built this rig with electricity and water, you know, I knew exactly what I wanted to do, and then take it out to the middle of nowhere for a couple of weeks. Take it out to the north rim of the Grand Canyon. The real goal was take it to the north rim of the Grand Canyon for 2 weeks and make waffles while camped on the rim of Grand Canyon. And I did that at a place called Crazy Jug shortly after I left Oklahoma, having taken care of the personal business I had to do there. And then I just kept going. I went up through Utah, Bryce Canyon. I passed through Idaho three times. I saw Yellowstone, I saw Glacier National Park, saw North Cascades National Park, Mount Rainier. I camped this most beautiful campsite at Mount Rainier in this field of flowers. It's just one of the most beautiful places that I've been. And, you know, kind of like with the Grand Canyon, just such a privilege to camp there for so long. You know, I went to a place called Hell's Canyon that was incredible. Got very close to mountain sheep and a mule deer. And just, you know, that part of the country is just amazing. Saw some beautiful things in Montana, Wyoming, and then crossed over through through the northern tier of the U.S., stayed with my cousin in Michigan a little bit, stopped off in New Jersey, checked out the Jersey Shore with some friends, went back home up to New Hampshire, and then decided I needed to see the leaves up in Maine and New Hampshire. Even though I live there, I'm always at work whenever the leaves are changing, and, you know, certainly in daylight hours. You know, maybe on the weekends you can get up there with 10,000 other tourists, but for the most part, it was just seeing the leaves around your house. So it was nice. I got up there to Acadia National Park, you know, went to Reversing Falls State Park. I saw Quoddy Head Lighthouse, which is the farthest easternmost point in the U.S. And then I came back down and hung out at home for a little bit. I actually in Sticks and Bricks house did a few modifications to the rig and headed on out to have Thanksgiving with my family in Missouri eventually. On the way there, though, I stopped off and did the interviews with Jen and met up with an old friend from back in the good old days when I lived in St. Louis. It was good to meet to see her again and meet her husband and especially drive his fast, nice cars. It's very much being Ferris Bueller. And then I came down to Missouri, and I got to spend a lot of really quality time with all of my extended family there, and it was wonderful. By saying, I'm about to say, I don't want to seem like I'm advocating van life too much or playing down sticks and bricks life too much, but I'll tell you what I feel good about. I've been doing this for, well over a year now, and I'm not going to say that it's the most convenient thing, especially on a day like today. It kind of reminds you, that this isn't the best. But in the van that I'm in, it's really not bad. But what makes it feel good, and what I say over and over again to people, is that, I live on the energy that, my shadow takes, basically. And so my cooking, my heating of my water for tea and for bathing, for cleaning, although there's not too much hot water used for cleaning, because I clean mostly with 30% vinegar and water. And it's such a little place to clean, so you can keep it really clean. You can monitor things, if you have a leak or something failing or something being wonky. If you have to repair something, it's small. The overhead is low, and I think, that's one of the biggest things you learn about businesses is low overhead, right? And if you extend business principles to your life, if you're starting a new life, then, you got to tend to your own feces. So, a lot of people are too good to deal with their own shit. It's not my favorite thing. I minimize the amount of time I spend doing it. It's just one of the least pleasant things about my day, every 2 weeks. So, it doesn't seem like a big imposition, to me. the efficiency of living off a gallon of water a day, it's totally doable and totally, I splurge every, depending on where I'm at, sometimes every day. If I'm in a regular sticks and bricks, or if I'm, near, can drive in easy or whatever, I'll go in every day. Shower if I'm at a campground. But if not, bathing in the van, night one is a couple of regular baby wipes or a giant man wipe or whatever. So that's night one. Night two is just a regular old sponge bath. And, so many people say they can't take a sponge bath or whatever, but, I've had plenty of sponge baths in my life over the many times I have had to wear a big long cast or be bedridden. So, boo-hoo, that's nothing to me. But the freedom that I get and the views that I get, it has a trade-off. It's not for everybody. Definitely it is efficient, and not having an electric bill. And so throughout this whole time period, I am, I'm taking care of my medication. I'm stretching. I have to, I pretty much am getting up at like 4 or 5 in the morning. And then I will, take my Neprenol, wait an hour or whatever, and then, come in with whatever cannabinoids I'm using that day. It's generally on the order of about 20 milligrams of CBG and 20 milligrams of some kind of full spectrum concentrate. After the Neprenol has kicked in. I do plan on talking about the differences between different states and everything. Oklahoma is a funny one. Oklahoma, until a couple of years ago, you could not buy anything stronger than 3.5% alcohol cold. So if you had a 6% alcohol beer or 5% or 4.8 or whatever, like almost all beer, it had to be sold in a liquor store and it had to be sold warm. And that was Oklahoma law. there were a lot of weird laws about alcohol. And then they approved cannabis, and boom, 2,200 dispensaries in a state with 3 million people. And I don't know how many they have now, but they just keep building more, it seems. I can take you to, let's see, I believe it is, if you want to look on weed maps or something, the intersection of 15th and Broadway in Edmond, Oklahoma. I believe that's what it is. And I think there's 8 dispensaries at that intersection. That's not even the main part of town. If you look at weed maps and look at Oklahoma City, look at how many dispensaries there are. It is crazy. That said, I found a good one. I really like their products and the selection of products that they have. I have no relationships to them whatsoever. Never spoken to anyone there other than the bud tenders. But it is UWD. It's actually on that intersection, at least that one is. And what I like about them is they have a large selection of individual cannabinoids. They have products that other states tell you you're not supposed to have, like a 100 milligram Icy or a slush puppy, which, you know, I think if you have stomach cancer or something like that, it could be really useful for you. They sell 100 milligram gummy bears, which is, you know, 5 to 10 times the dose that most states will tell you you can have. Oklahoma, I can tell you for certain, is a state of nothing in moderation. They definitely do not play around, so I'd be careful if you go to the dispensary there. There are some strong products. 100 milligram gummy bear will knock most people down. I don't generally use edibles, but something like that being so far out of the ordinary, I pick some up to see if, kind of like with dabbing a gram of CBD, you know, will it work with the neprenol, or is it really nothing? You know, I just want to make sure it's not a matter of dosage, you know. And I think that's one of the advantages that you can do with marijuana once you become comfortable with cannabis. You're not going to OD on it. You're going to have a bad time. I don't advise that you take too much. But you can find out what too much is for yourself and forget about these you know, doctors who don't know what an endocannabinoid system is, and other people telling you what your dose should be. I don't care what they say. Determine for yourself. Anyway, so I get a little bit up about that, I guess. But I think for good reason, because I would not be healed if I didn't have the strong doses, you know. The little doses got things going, but I have needed, you know, what most people would consider recreational doses. I think most states would consider recreational doses for many months. For many, many months. But, let's see. So I've now, you know, I've come back. I think I left you in Missouri, you know, on the trip. And then I ended up, now I'm back down in Arizona. That part doesn't matter so much. But why did I do all this? I spent, especially the year and a half on fentanyl, but other years as well, staring out a window in a great, really a lot of pain. I wish I could say a senior moment. Telling you all these things, I feel like I've lived a few lifetimes. But on the other hand, I feel like brand new. And as I was getting dressed, I stood up on my foot. You know, it's constantly changing. I mean, every day I'm tearing something new and you know, honing my techniques and my medications. And, you know, today I'm just getting dressed, and it's kind of the first time I'm using that right leg. And really, so we're getting to the point where the changes are small, you know, they're subtle. It requires some really focused effort, and I'm changing like little, you know, the initial focus is always just something in my foot. Still to this day, I just focus on making each foot have 4 equally weighted points. And I'm still really not very close, but I am so much closer. It varies, you know. I mean, as all these things come misaligned, I think this will all be explained eventually in terms of the tensegrity model. And I'm really not that familiar with it, so I am pretty much speaking out of turn, but all I know from it is from, I believe his name is Bruce Schoenfields. he has a documentary that's out on Vimeo, I'm going to link to that too. It costs $15. I bought it personally myself. You know, so obviously I found it worth it. If you have a serious interest in the current known state of fascia to humanity, I think it's a pretty good place to start. You know, for it's a very dense source of information. So, anyway, in that is my only introduction to the tensegrity model. But I can tell you that I think that everything that I have experienced, you know, is just in line with that, with the tensegrity model, to my understanding. And furthermore, I think that the, as I've mentioned in previous shows, the waviness, the distortion of the fascia that I propose, or maybe other people propose. I am not familiar with the literature, and I need to look for the origin of the bands that are characterized in fibromyalgia. I think that those would probably work very well by incorporating Fourier theory into the tensegrity model, and I think if you do that, you come up with a very powerful model for how the human body actually moves and its relationship to the fascia. So I look forward to, you know, myself digging in more into fascia and speaking with some people that actually know things. Originally, when I started thinking about this show years ago, when, you know, I was on the table with my massage therapist, who I still, so she's had some heavy personal stuff come down, and so we'll have to wait for a while to hear from Deb, but, I think we will hear from her, and, but anyway, back to the, you know, in that time period when I started slowly getting better, and, you know, she starts feeling the change after all these years, and I start feeling better. And we're both kind of like, well, what even, you know, what is happening? And I think, you know, it'd be interesting to, I don't want to say anything because I feel like I lead the witness sometimes. But I really, yeah. I want to save, you know, my conversation for Deb, for the two of us, whenever we have it. And I really, really look forward to bringing that with you because, she's just, you know, she's been a special person, to me. Her commitment to helping me get better. You know, I tell that story about, you know, I would have bought her BMW. Well, you know, then the natural thing is, I think it just shows what a jerk I am. You know, I never actually did. So, yeah. Okay, this is almost the 2-year anniversary of when that leg really started to break up. About a month before I went out to California with that vape cartridge, there's a story that I tell in another piece of tape that maybe I'll find it and dig it up, put it up another time, about it, the grisly process of tearing that adhesion fascia. That stuff was so thick. I mean, I was using my other leg and foot to pull a plastic tool into it, and there was just like this, it was like breaking chicken apart, you know, like raw chicken, like you were just tearing it apart with your hands and trying to tear those tendons apart. Now, these weren't tendons. I'm not talking about that's what I'm tearing. This is the quote-unquote connective tissue. This is the fascia that is all, you know, somehow bound together with, you know, we'll just say scar tissue because, or fibrin. At least the serrapeptase and the nepronol seem to dissolve whatever it is, and they claim that it's fibrin. I guess I was just thinking back, you know, I didn't go back and look at my notes or anything, but I was just thinking about, I was like, man, I'm talking about this leg started breaking up 2 years ago. That's like a long time to be working on something, isn't it? You know, it feels like it was just maybe 1 year, but it's not. And, you know, like I said, back in February 2019, when I made all my final decisions, I, I felt like that's how long it might take if I stayed on the same trajectory. And as I stand here today, you know, I guess I'm a little bit on just here at Pop while I'm working on it. I'm always working on it. If I'm standing, which if you see the rig, I'm pretty much always standing. If I worked on it constantly. And, you know, I don't know. Engineers always like to feel right. So that's not really what I'm pointing out. It's more like I don't even care. Like, I don't care about right, wrong. All I care about is getting better. Is that my stomach? Yeah, I haven't eaten again. I did take a bath, though. You know, what do you do? I mean, you know, seriously, what else would I do? I would not be getting better if I did not put this attention into myself. And I don't really give a flying fuck who cares about it. I don't know what to say to you if you have a problem with it at this point. And I don't know what to say, you know, to law enforcement other than, you know, hey, I'm doing my best. I know that that's all that they can say too. And, you know, I have plenty of family that's law enforcement and good, you know, very good friends that might as well be family, so that are family to me. I love you guys. And, you know, my brother's a public servant. Appreciate everybody's efforts, and I understand, you know, everybody is bound by the laws. But I guess I'm just here to tell you that the law is inhumane, and I cannot abide by it in its exact form. But I'm doing my best, and I'm trying to be respectful. And I don't, you know, I want to be clear here. I am not telling anyone, and I don't want anyone, and I'm very concerned with the open flaunting of federal law. This is a sign of, you know, governmental failure. So I think we all owe it to, you know, the histories of our families to try and keep this country together, you know, and to obey the laws, which are just, and do the very best that we can. I don't know if I ever got around to thanking Deb, and maybe I can cut that last part out and move it after here. But Deb, you know, there's no way to thank someone for, you know, helping you figure out how to get better. You know, 15 minutes of a doctor every 3 months is not enough to figure out, you know, and I don't want to make it seem, you know, massage was a, you know, necessarily the primary reason or anything, but it definitely, you know, having her knowledge and her capability, and just her generosity of spirit, in willingness to, you know, work on my neck and stuff in ways that no one else would. And it was nothing crazy, but, well, again, let's leave that story. Yeah. Anyway. Deb Guimon. Which I don't believe is how she says, Mike says his last name, so I apologize, but from the bottom of my heart, thank you. We haven't gotten into my climbing career or any of that other stuff, but I've got some stories to tell you guys along the way. But really, the focus of the show is going to shift now from me to you, if you're a chronic pain patient, or hopefully eventually to the chronic pain patient that you know. If you're listening to this, and maybe you're just listening to it for entertainment, and if so, I appreciate that. I hope that you take away that I am very blessed to have had these experiences. I want to thank you guys for listening. thank you for your time. And I look forward to, you know, the new format and some, a little bit of new and different content that is not so Steve Coleman-centric. Till next time, thank you for listening to the Origami Bandcast.